You know that we have, from time to time in the Christian community, coined our own terms. Sometimes we need a term for something and we don't quite have it, so we just make it up. And the term that came up a couple of decades ago for the first time was one anothering. We had all these passages in the New Testament about what we do to one another, and we needed a term for it. So we call, you know, one anothering. It's our term. And today we're going to be looking at that term, and we're going to be talking about 26 different ideas and 46 passages of Scripture. So you'll be glad to know that we have 26 main points today in our message. Most of these are pretty fast. A couple of those will linger on a little bit longer. But, you know, we have a phenomenon, right? A few years back, this was first noticed by sociologists, and a book came out that's called Bowling Alone. And it meant that bowling leagues were becoming less and less popular. But, you know, it's not a book about bowling. It's a book about how society is more and more isolating the people from one another. And so you bowl alone. We talked some years back about the shift even in dancing. So, you know, if you go back to 300 years ago, and mostly you had group dancing, like, you know, barn dancing, line dancing, that kind of thing. And then you come forward in time, you have couples dancing, and come forward in time again, you have Michael Jackson dancing by himself. He's all by himself. And that is symbolic of our culture. We're all by ourselves. We don't need church. We don't need family. We just stay in our rooms. And that's pretty scary. And that really doesn't work in New Testament Christianity. That can never work. And so the important idea here is that there's Christian community. You need one another. If you don't have that, bad things are going to happen in your Christian life. And your Christian life, of course, extends forever and ever into your eternal reward. All right. And this also has to do with domestic violence. Sometimes we hear about people saying, well, I'm so burned at church. Well, we don't want that to be the case either. So let's talk about the 26 ideas in one anothering. And we start with this one, Colossians 3:16. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another. Teaching. So, yes, we know that there is a spiritual gift of teaching. We know that there are people in the congregation called pastors and teachers. Okay, but besides that, every Christian has ever lived as a teacher. It is impossible for you not to be a teacher. In the book of Hebrews, when for the time you ought to teach others, you have need that one teach you, which be the first principles of the oracles of God. Everybody should be teaching. And so in this text, you're saying, if you will grow as a Christian, if you'll let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, you're a teacher. You have to teach one another. All the good teaching at Avalon doesn't come from the platform to the congregation. It has to be back and forth to one another. You have something that has to be said to the next guy. And that person has something that needs to be said to you. And you teach one another. That's really, really important. If you don't have people teaching you, if you're not in a submissive attitude so that you are teachable, then there are many things that are slammed close to you and you don't understand them and you won't understand them because, for whatever reason, it is possible for you to read a verse of Scripture 10,000 times and never pick up on the obvious implications that has to you. And then somebody will say, you know, the Scripture says you shouldn't do that. Like, I never thought of it that way. You have to teach one another, and there's no end to that. You have to warn one another, and this is sort of similar. In Colossians 3:16, the same text talks about laying the word of Christ when you're richly teaching and admonishing one another in psalms, hymns, spiritual songs. Admonishment is teaching with a warning. It's teaching with a sharp edge. I'm not just teaching you. I'm warning you. You can't do this. And here, this idea is that you would all be warning one another. In Romans 15:14, Paul has the same idea. He says, I'm persuaded of you, my brethren, you are also full of goodness, able also to admonish one another. So this warning has to go every direction. The problem with the concept of one-on-one discipleship is that it is really not very New Testament endorsed. And this is. What you want is a network, a spider web. This guy warns you about this thing, and this guy warns you about that thing, and this guy comes at it from this angle, and that guy comes at it from this angle. And you have a web of people teaching and warning one another. And Paul says, I'm sure you're able to warn one another. Not from the disciple-er to the disciplee, But every direction, everybody warning everybody, everybody teaching everybody. And that's what makes the fabric, the network of Christian community work. Calvin Miller is so good like this. And he says, malicious truth gloats like a conqueror. Loving truth mourns that it must confront and show a brother his error. I do not relish the thought of bringing this up with you, but I must bring it up with you. I hate to. I'm mourning that I have to, but I have to. Malicious truth struts at its power. Loving truth weeps to find that the correction it inspires may for a while cause great pain. Malicious truth cries, checkmate, you are beaten. Loving truth whispers, I correct you with the same pain you feel, but when the pain is over, we shall rejoice that honesty and love have been served. We have to warn one another, but as I say that, you also have to remember that the warning is being done with pain in a spirit of love. The last thing I want to do is correct you. I don't want to, but it is what I am to do. The third concept in one anothering is refusal to judge one another. What an important concept. We find it really well here in Romans 14:13. Therefore, let us not judge one another anymore, but rather see that we don't put a stumbling block in our brother's way. In Joel Aldrich's book, Lifestyle Evangelism, he talks about what we call the professional weaker brother, the legalist. He says, this guy, he makes other believers the prisoners of his expectations. You know, I judge you. You're not doing it right. I expect this of you, and you are less than. He makes other believers the prisoners of his expectations. The legalist carefully builds his own pattern of living, and then he tries to make it normative for the entire Christian community. I call this mature believer, mature because he's been saved a long time. I call this mature believer, who should know better, the professional weaker brother. He wishes to force others to comply with his viewpoint. This form of hypocrisy contributes more toward the death of beauty in a church than any other factor. So we can't judge one another. It is impossible to imagine what's going on in another person's heart. It is impossible to imagine why another person may have a different response to your temptation than you have. Maybe that's not his deal. That's your deal. And so you think, well, for me, I have to insulate myself from this or I'm going to crash and burn. Well, that might not be his case. And so you imagine that another person must be crashing and burning, and he's not. That's your case. That's not his case. And so you have your expectations. You try to put that on somebody else, and we're not supposed to judge one another. You just don't know. The fourth concept in one anothering. Refuse to say what is untrue or unkind about one another. We sometimes call that slander. Slander is saying anything untrue or unkind about a person. In today's parlance, saying anything negative about a person unnecessarily. That is, it's not true and or it's not kind. James 4:11, so simple. Speak not evil one of another, brethren. Do not speak evil of somebody. Say, what's evil? It's true. Yeah, but is it kind? It's true, but you said it in a way that was not kind. It's got to be both true and kind. So back to Calvin Miller's idea. Malicious truth cries, checkmate, I got you, I beat you, I win. Love would never let you do that. What you say has to be both true and kind. It has to pass the true test and the kind test. If it doesn't, it's slander. You said something unkind about someone. Don't do that. You said something untrue about someone. Don't do that. Just refuse to do it. And that's what it means to one another correctly. Bear with one another. You know, we joke about that. Mark Twain says, the more I'm around people, the more I like my dog. Which is funny and awful. Which basically means he's going to come, not that he cares. I mean, I don't know Mark Twain's religious views. He's going to come to passages like this and say, no, I'm not going to bear with people. I'm not going to put up with it. That's not a Christian option. If you're going to love Jesus, you can't say, I'm not going to put up with that. Yes, you are too, because you're Christians and you're going to put up with it for Jesus' sake. That's what it means to one another in the church community. Ephesians 4:2, walk worthy of the calling. You want to be worthy of what you're called to be, right? In Jesus, you are the child of the King of heaven. So walk worthy of the calling with which you were called, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long-suffering, bearing with one another in love. Yes, you are going to bear with them. Say, that's insufferable. No, it's not. For a Christian, there's no such thing as insufferable. I will always suffer whatever needs to be suffered to bring you as far as I can in your walk with Jesus. It's never insufferable. It's never unbearable. You just will bear with people. That's what it means to be a Christian, to follow Jesus. Colossians 3:13, bearing with one another and forgiving one another. See, bearing with one another, you have to do that. So bear with one another. The sixth concept in one anothering is to accept one another. What a simple and profound idea. Accept one another. So in Romans 15:7, wherefore, receive one another, as Christ also received us to the glory of God. I accept you. You don't have to repair your relationship with me. There's nothing you have to do to repair us. We're good. I accept you. Accept people. James 5:9 says it similarly. The word receive or accept doesn't occur, but the same idea. Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Don't say that guy, that guy, that guy. Yeah. It's so easy for us to pop off with things like that. I was with somebody some time back, and they said something about a Christian that I know. And I remember thinking, I don't think that's true. I don't know that you should say that about her. As far as I know, that's not correct. And it was just casual. Like, there was no reason that had to be said. It was sort of like with a roll of the eyes. Like, I don't think you want to do that. I don't know that person real well. I could be fooled, but I don't think you want to do that. You have to receive people, accept them. You know, like, hey, you know, I want you in my life to accept one another. So simple. E. Stanley Jones is great this way. I tell you this quote from time to time. He had sinned. As a new Christian, he's in a Bible study group, and he blew it. He did something that was very wrong. And he didn't know if he'd even go to the Bible study. He decided he would go to the Bible study, but he had no idea how this was going to turn out. And he went in with, you know, his hat in his hand, feeling entirely ashamed. And he said, but they never uttered a criticism or even thought of one as far as I could see. The reaction was nothing but redemptive love. That was a very crucial moment in my life. The moment when I lost my music. My destiny was in the hands of that group. I love that. He said, they didn't utter any criticism, or as far as I know, they didn't even think of any criticism. It's like, Stanley, we want you in our group. Come on, we want you, which is just great. George Watson is so good this way, too. So there seems to be so much of self in their strength, and the strength of these Christians that are all around us. There seems so much of self in their strength, and their very righteousness is severe and critical. They have everything to make them saints except the crushing weight of an unspeakable crucifixion, you know, to die with Christ, which would grind them into a supernatural tenderness and limitless charity for others. So the idea, accept people. You don't have to be stern and critical and mean, or even just think things like they are less than, they are not up to par, substandard. You don't want to think that. You don't want to think that about people at Avalon. You don't want to think that about people in the Southern Baptist Convention. You don't want to think that about people in the Presbyterian denomination. You don't want to think that about the people in your neighbor's church. You don't want to think that. You just have to stop all that. You have to accept these Christians. Just accept them. The seventh idea in one anothering. Be kind to one another. Simple, right? Ephesians 4:32. Be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another. 1 Thessalonians 5:15 is a little different, but it is still similar. Always pursue what is good, both for yourselves and for all. And when it says both for yourselves in Greek, that's the same word that is one another everywhere else. So pursue what is good for yourselves. Be kind. Good is, in that sense, related to kind. You just have to be kind to one another. Not only in what you say and what you do, but what you think. Is that a kind way to think? Be kind. And that's how you live in community. The eighth concept in one anothering, serve one another. Of course, this comes up in more than one way. So when I talk about 46 passages, we could add many more, but these are representative. Galatians 5:13, simple. Only use not liberty for an opportunity for the flesh, but by love serve one another. Just serve people. You have to, in this great spider web of the Christian community, you serve that guy, and that guy serves you. And then third person serves both of you, and both of you serve the third person, and the network, the web, grows and grows. You have to do that to one another. Not just one-on-one, but all of us, you know, pile on. That's the idea. John 13:14. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you ought also to wash one another's feet. Not necessarily literally, but you get the idea. 1 Corinthians 11:33, because they were all having a potluck meal, except they didn't join it together. Like, I brought steak, you brought porridge. Well, you just continue with your porridge, and I'm going to continue with my steak. And by the way, I'm not waiting for you if you're late. Therefore, my brothers, when you come together to eat, wait for one another. I always wondered about that when I was a kid. Why is it that people wait? Like, we're going to have this gathering, and little brother isn't back from work yet, so we're going to wait. Why do we do that? Or, I'm not going to eat my dessert till the hostess who is serving the dessert sits down with her plate, and then we'll all eat dessert together. Why do we do that? I mean, why not just be like a dog and jump right in? The answer, of course, is the Bible taught us not to do that. Like, oh, well, that's why we wait. I didn't know. I thought it was just, you know, a British thing or something. No. Wait for each other. Take care of each other. Serve each other in this way. You got to watch out for the other guy. Similarly, submit to one another. The ninth idea in one anothering, submit to one another. Not just, I'm the pastor, you're the congregation, so you submit to me. I'm the husband, you're the wife, so you submit to me. I'm the parent, you're the child, so you submit to me. I'm the employer, you're the employee, so you submit to me. I'm the admiral, you're the enlisted, so you submit to me. No. Everybody submitting to everybody. Pile on. Network. Internet. Everybody going every direction in a web where each person is letting the other person have his way. That is mission critical. You don't have a church, you don't have a community, unless everybody is submitting to everybody else. And that's what makes us great. Ephesians 5:21, submitting yourselves one to another. This is for everybody in the church, not just for families, not just for pastors and congregations. Everybody submits to everybody else. That's how this is supposed to work. Same idea in 1 Peter 5:5. Likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves unto the elders, but it goes both directions. You elders, submit yourselves to them too. Submit yourselves one to another. Everybody, one to another, submitting. That's how this is supposed to work. Defer to one another, and similar to honor, I could have separated these, but I kind of felt like they were the same. So this is one of the great illustrations of how I submit to you. How can it be done? So Romans 12:10, be kindly affectionate one to another in brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another. Preferring one another. That is, we would probably say deferring. Honey, where do you want to go out to eat tonight? I don't know. Let's go where you want to go. I defer to you. What song do you think we should sing? I don't know. I defer to you. What song do you want to sing in church today? What do you think we should do with this extra money? I don't know. I defer to you. What do you think we should do with it? What should we do with this point of contention? I want to do it this way. You want to do it that way. How do we know what to do? Well, tell you what. I defer to you. Let's do it your way. See, that's deference. In this case, preference. And honor, preferring the other person. So you see, the honor is there, and deference is there. Hard to know which way to go. Should they be separate, or are they the same? Don't know. But Philippians 2:3. This is just wonderful. In lowliness of mind, let each esteem others. And in Greek, once again, that's, you know, alleluia. That's one another. All these other passages have been alleluia as well. But let each esteem is estimate, regard. let each of you estimate the others to be better than yourself. Wow. Well, you know, what's your idea on Calvinism? I don't know, what's your idea? Well, you might be right. You know, what's your idea on dispensationalism? I don't know, what's your idea? You might be right. You're better than I am. You know, what do you think? Maybe you're right. That's a much better way to go through life. That doesn't mean you can't draw your own conclusions, but it just means you consider the other person to be smarter than you are. You know, what do you think about women's dress code? I don't know. What do you think about women's dress code? You might be right. See, that's such a much better way to live. You're smarter than I am. You're more moral than I am. You have better character. What do you think? I defer to you. See, that's just amazing. And that is how you live in Christian community together. Ephesians 4:32 is on forgiveness. Be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another. There it is, forgiving one another. One anothering comes to forgiveness. Same in Colossians 3:13, bearing with one another and forgiving one another. You have to forgive people. Such an easy idea, such an impossible idea, right? Which is it? Again, George Watson, that all-pervading spirit of tenderness instinctively buries and forgets all bad things. People who live in hot climates bury their dead very soon after death. In like manner, tenderness of spirit lives in the torrid zone of God's love and quickly buries all putrid things out of its sight. Don't think about the wrongs that have been done to you in the past. Just forget all about that. Every man ought to have a fair-sized cemetery in which to bury the faults of his friends. Just do away with them. You don't need them. They're not really helpful. And they torpedo all of the relationships, all of the community that almost you had at your fingertips. Pray for one another. The 12th idea. James 5:16, confess your faults one to another. Pray for one another that you may be healed. Pray for one another. What a simple and obvious, important truth. Care for one another. I like this word, care. I am trying to show you here that this is not exactly tangible care. This is emotional care. So in 1 Corinthians 12:25, that there should be no schism. Schism is a separation. That there should be no separation in the body, but that all the members should have the same care one for another. And in Greek, that word for care, I mean, it obviously would trickle down to helping you shovel your sidewalk when it snows. You know, tangible, physical care. But mostly what it means is worry, concern, emotions. So sometimes a person will say, well, I may love you, but I don't like you. As a Christian, that's not an option. As a Christian, you're going to care for one another. And by care, we mean, in Greek, merimna, which I'm sure you like to hear. Concern, worry, anxiety. I do care emotionally for you. I don't just love you. I'm like all emotionally involved with this. I'm worried about you. I'm anxious about you. I want your life to go well. I am all emotionally invested in you. That's called caring for one another. And that's what makes community wonderful. Be at peace with one another. And we have lots of information on this in the New Testament. But notice three representative passages. Mark 9:50, have salt in yourselves, says Jesus to his disciples, and have peace one with another. Have peace. Live in peace with each other. Romans 12:16, be of the same mind toward one another. That's agreement. I want you to have the same mind. Agree. 1 Corinthians 5:13, just be at peace among yourselves. Be at peace. You can do that. So the Lord is calling us to peace. Say, you know, I think we ought to, as Jude says it, to earnestly contend for the faith once delivered to the saints. Yes, I want to fight. I'll fight with you. I'll fight with you. I'll fight with you. Like, I don't think that's what you want us to be doing in the household of faith. I think that we are supposed to teach what is right and stand for what is right and all those things. But as far as eagerness to quarrel and debate and to cause contention, remember in the book of Proverbs, only by pride comes contention. I don't think you want that. The servant of the Lord must not strive. So in the body, you just have to agree with people. Where they are doing something chapter and verse wrong, that's where we talked about teaching and warning. But when you teach and warning, teach and do the warning, you're going to do that which with so much care and concern and gentleness that it is going to be easier for the person to hear. Never easy. Norman Grubb, speaking about Matthew 7, the beam and the splinter in the eye, right? The mote, as Jesus said, is obviously the fiddling little thing in my brother which has taken on major proportions in my sight. The beam in my eye, the log of wood, is this mounting, enlarging, critical attitude towards him which blocks out my seeing him as I normally should. Christ in me, seeing Christ in them. That's just so well said. Christ in me, seeing Christ in you. And back and forth you go, not one-on-one, not pastor to congregation, every Christian to every Christian, not just in Avalon, but Avalon to this church and Avalon to that denomination and that denomination to Avalon, and back and forth we go all around. That's how this is supposed to work. You're at peace. You think, but that guy is too Calvinistic for me. So what? You know, there's a place for teaching and admonishing and all of that, but the idea that should capture us is that is a Christian brother. Christ in him is the same as Christ in me. I like that guy. Norman Grubb continues, I then speak the truth in love and with the humility which esteems other better than myself. You see how they all come together. All these concepts are welded together. Esteems others better than myself and maybe more right than I. And anyhow, I have plenty of wrongs in myself that others can see. So I say, but you are a container of Christ as I trust I am. Therefore, you and I are one, and I am honored to be joined to you in Christ and want to do my part in not letting lesser differences appear to break our unity in co-loving and co-working. Love in this respect is greater than the lesser truth of whether you or I are right about this. Well, that guy, he baptizes babies. I'm not going to talk to him. That guy, as a believer, is your brother. He is the one whom Jesus dearly loves. And if he's wrong about baptizing babies, as I think he is, yet he is a brother. And for me to torch the relationship, the warmth, because he baptizes babies, is a huge mistake. And someone has rightfully said, well, you realize people have literally killed each other over this issue in the Reformation. They really have. Like, yes. And we're very, very sorry for that. Shame on us. Shame on us. It's too bad. So, has it been a life and death issue? Yes. Should it have been a life and death issue? Never. The 15th idea, refuse to provoke one another into becoming upset. I just don't want to make you upset. I don't wish for it. I will avoid it as I can. Galatians 5:26, let us not become conceited. Vainglory, that's such a great word, isn't it? Vainglory. Glory, I want to be glorified. I want to be radiant, vainly. Because I'm very selfish, that's what I want. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory. Don't do this conceited provoking one another. Don't provoke one another. Provoking, I'm stirring you up. I'm spurring you to anger. I'm upsetting you. I know. And we even use that term. I tell it to Teresa all the time. Can I just push your buttons, honey? Well, of course, that's very evil. So I never do. when I am in hot water with her, I sing this little song from the Carpenters. What do you get when you fall in love? A guy with a pin to burst your bubble. That's my job. We got to burst the bubble. But that's evil. See, don't do that. Do not provoke like that. Don't do that. Again, George Watson, even among intensely religious people, nothing is more rare to find than a continuous, all-pervading spirit of tenderness. It instinctively avoids wounding the feelings of others by talking on unpleasant things, wrangling in an argumentative way, by referring to painful and mortifying subjects. It carries its point by ceasing to contend and wins its opponent by seeming to let him have his way. It cannot scold or scowl or threaten. It has lost the power of quarreling. What a blessed description of any person to lose the power of quarreling. That's so great. And yet that's exactly what we're talking about. Do not be provoking one another. If you find that this subject is sensitive, don't talk about it. You don't have to hammer away on something. Sometimes parents have driven their children away. Just hammer and hammer and hammer on something. Like, Mom and Dad, stop it. Don't hammer. Sometimes good friends have just parted because somebody got stuck on something and they weren't going to let it go. Don't do that. Don't provoke the person to upsetness. Avoid that. That's not how we treat one another. We talked about that. Carry the loads of one another. Galatians 6:2. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. The idea is not simply to be independent so that you don't burden others, which of course is a very Christian idea. Every man shall bear his own burden in the same chapter, the next statement from Paul. Every man is going to bear his own burden. So yes, Christians want to bear their own burdens as much as possible. But I don't want to just provide for me and for my family. I also want to provide for you. That's what I want. You have to carry the other person's load. That's what we want. And this happens in, 10,000 ways. Emily Freeman writes about her difficulty. Her husband was a youth pastor. When father-in-law died, the husband loved his dad very much, and he just became emotionally unwell. He couldn't be a youth pastor anymore. And so life got really hard. He was the youth pastor. He couldn't be a youth pastor anymore. He was the breadwinner. He's not the main breadwinner anymore. He's very despondent. So the marriage is a little bit different. Everything is different. And she's had a lot of disappointment in her life. And one of those times when she was feeling pretty lonely, she said, "I realized I had two choices. I could either continue as I was, waiting for people to come to me, to show up and surround me, or I could decide to move toward people myself. Would I rather have people just come to me? Yes. Would I rather be pursued than pursue? Yes." But Christians don't do that. The idea is not that everybody has to come to you, send you little cards and love notes and poof you up and give you little gifts and special little considerations. You shouldn't require any of that. Not only do I not want you to give me cards and love notes and all that, I mean, you can if you want to. I want to do that for you. I don't have any intention of having you bear my burden. Every man will bear his own burden, but I have every intention as a believer to bear your burden. I'll carry you. So I don't require, you have nothing to repair in our relationship if you don't give me cards and letters and phone calls and texts and Facebook posts and whatever else. There's nothing to repair in our relationship because I'm following Jesus. You all have to say that. There's nothing to repair here. Not only do I not want you to carry my burden, I want to carry some of your burden. It's all backwards. So must they come to me, surround me, show up for me? No. But I will do what I can to show up for them, to surround them, to send them little kindnesses. That's what it means to follow Jesus. That's what it means to live in community. You carry the loads of others. That's what's happening. The 17th idea, be hospitable one to another. Oftentimes, you will hear somebody say that hospitality is particularly in the New Testament for saved people to lost people. And I'm very glad to hear that. You know, that's fine. And in Greek, the word actually means lover of the xenos, lover of the stranger, of the foreigner. That is, you know, philos, xenos. That's what it means, lover of strangers. But clearly, Peter is not talking about that here. He's talking about loving the people who are one anothering in the Christian community. So lover of strangers is great, you know, be hospitable to the lost people, but that's not what this is about. This is about loving one another in a way that usually implies food, shelter, and social gatherings. So be hospitable. The 18th idea, to build people up. I always like to just sort of paraphrase this, to build people. I want you to build people in life. Remember, I always say, anything else you build the houses, the cars, the little crafty things you do when you go to Michael's. You build that, it's all going to go away. But you build people, they last forever. People never die. So build what you want to build out there in your garage or in your craft room or whatever you want to build. Build it, but it's going to go away. What won't go away is if you build people. And that's what this is about. In community, we build people. We build people up. Let us therefore follow after things which make for peace and things wherewith one may edify one another. Edify is like the word edifice. You know, a constructed building is an edifice. You have to build people. Edify one another. You edify me, I'll edify you. The third person will edify both of us. Both of us will edify the third person. We'll add a fourth person, and on we go. Not one-on-one, not pastor congregation. Everybody on everybody, pile on. And that's how it works. 1 Thessalonians 5:11, comfort each other and edify one another. Same thing. The 19th idea in one anothering, comfort one another. And these are the same verses as the encourage verses, because this word in Greek, parakaleo, can be translated comfort, encourage, either way, and sometimes even inspire. If we're talking about exciting a person, motivating a person. So 1 Thessalonians 4:18, wherefore, comfort one another with these words. You have to comfort people with your words, and particularly with God's words. 1 Thessalonians 5:11, the very next chapter in the same book, Paul says, therefore, comfort yourselves together. Together there is that allelus, one another, comfort one another, and edify one another, even as also you do. Hebrews 3:13, exhort one another. Exhort basically just means encourage or motivate. So motivate one another daily, encourage one another daily while it's still called today, because pretty soon the darkness will come when no man can work, right? So all of this has to do with comfort, encouragement, exhortation, if you want to use that word, motivation, inspiration, if you want to use those words. And these are the same ideas, again, in the same verses. Only just notice here it's exhort, here it's comfort, comfort in Greek, all the same. So we're talking about encouraging people, inspiring people, motivating people, cheering for them. You can do it. My favorite examples in history of this term, parakaleo, are in military context, when the commanding officer stands before his troops and he says, we are going to go out and we're going to be in battle. And the historian says, and so with these similar words, he exhorted them. He was giving a pep talk before battle. He was inspiring them. He was motivating them. And that's what we're going to do to other people. We're going to encourage them. We're going to comfort them. We're going to motivate them, inspire them. We're going to give them a pep talk, and not just a pep talk, you know, pep conduct, pep treatment. We're going to take care of people and spur them on. Obviously related to this, spurring on one another. In Hebrews 10:24, let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, to provoke unto love and good works. Provoke, but not provoke bad like before. Let us not be provoking one another, envying one another, not provoking to upsetness. In this case, provoking one another to love and good works. We're going to provoke them to go the right direction. We're going to motivate them to go the right direction. And obviously very related to the ideas of encouraging, comforting, inspiring, motivating. Well, this is a big one. The 22nd idea in one anothering is confessing your faults one to another. And this is not comfortable for us. James 5:16, simply confess your faults one to another. Couldn't be more awful than that, right? So Shannon Popkin is married 2 years. She's talking to her mother-in-law, and for whatever reason, the conversation goes south. Mother-in-law tells Shannon some things that she did not like about Shannon's wedding. Well, kind of a rookie mistake. If you want to get along with women, it's pretty important that you don't insult their weddings. That was probably the most important, biggest party of their lives, a very precious day. You probably shouldn't insult somebody's wedding. But mother-in-law makes this rookie mistake. Well, Shannon is young, and she's a Christian, and she's very clever, and so she knows how to strike back. If Saul throws a spear, you could always pick up the same spear and throw it back, right? So Shannon says to mother-in-law, who's also a Christian, well, I think you just have a hard and bitter heart for you to say a thing like that. And so now Shannon has defined mother-in-law's entire existence as hard-hearted and bitter. So now mother-in-law can say, well, now I know what you really think about me, right? And so mother-in-law says, I am not hard and bitter. And Shannon says, well, Jesus taught us that out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So I think it's pretty evident that you are. Well, now there's a frosty chill on this conversation that will never go away. So the years go by, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And Shannon is reading in her Bible one day about the log in the eye and the speck in the eye. And she says, oh boy, that wasn't good, what I said to my mother-in-law. I basically wrote off her whole life, calling her a bitter and hard-hearted woman. That must have wounded her. So Shannon is in a ladies' Bible study, and she says what she's been thinking about and how wrong she was. To use that verse, you know, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, to provide commentary on her mother-in-law's entire existence. And the Bible study leader said, well, Shannon, did you ever tell your mother-in-law that? I think you should. Just unthinkable. Like, how do you possibly do that? So Shannon cried all the way home from the Bible study. How am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? Cried all the way home from the Bible study, went to her desk, got out pen and paper, and wrote a note to her mother-in-law in which she said, I'm so convicted about how I spoke to you. I was so busy pointing out the things that I saw in you, I didn't even hear how horrible I must have sounded. What an ugly, self-centered heart I had. I didn't even stop to wonder why you might be so upset. I didn't take the time to consider your feelings on the matter. I only focused on how ridiculous the situation seemed to me and how I completely exempted myself from the log sticking out of my own eye. I'm very sorry for treating you this way. It's a decade or so late, but I wish I could take it back. I wish I'd been more concerned with evaluating and judging the contents of my own heart rather than yours. She takes the letter to the mailbox. She's glad that the mailman came really fast so she couldn't reconsider and take it out of the mailbox. A week later, she gets a note from her mother-in-law. It was a very sweet note, so appreciative, and it really did so much for healing that relationship, and that's the last written thing she ever got from her mother-in-law, because her mother-in-law died. So that's it.
Oh, wow.
So you have to confess your faults one to another. If you've sinned in a way that's public, you have to confess it publicly. If you sinned in a way that's private between you and somebody else, you have to confess it privately. And that is what makes community real, makes integrity the bedrock of it all. The 23rd idea in one anothering, refuse to lie to one another. So simple. Colossians 3:9, do not lie to one another. Don't do that. So simple. Idea number 24 in one anothering, refuse to envy one another. Just don't envy anybody. Galatians 5:26, let us not become conceited, provoking one another and envying one another. Don't envy one another. I love and hate this quote I make reference to from time to time from Prince Francois de La Rochefoucauld. There is something not altogether unpleasant in hearing about the misfortunes of a friend. Even a friend? I hear that you won the lottery. I can't be happy with you because I'm competing with you and I wanted to win the lottery. Oh, I hear that you got demoted at work. Huh. Well, I always thought you were a bit of a stinker, and so that makes me feel better that I have been promoted at work. Something not entirely unpleasant about hearing even about the faults, the failures, the misfortunes of a friend. Ah, too bad. The 25th idea, you knew this one was coming, love one another. more than a dozen times, love one another. I know you can't see this screen, but I can, and I'll read it to you. John 13:34, a new command I give you, that you should love one another as I have also loved you, so also love one another, twice in one verse. John 15:12, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. John 15:17, these things I command you, that you love one another. Romans 12:10, be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. Romans 13:8, owe no man anything except to love one another. 1 Thessalonians 4:9, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. 1 John 3:11, this is the message that you heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. 1 John 3:23, and this is his commandment, that we should believe on the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and love one another, as he gave his commandment. 1 John 4:7, beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God. 1 John 4:11, beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. 2 John 5, not as though I wrote a new commandment to you, but that which you have had from the beginning, that we love one another. 1 Peter 1:22, love one another fervently with a pure heart. And 1 Peter 4:8, and above all things, have fervent love among yourselves. Love one another, love one another. It's everywhere. Amy Carmichael, as we walked along the seashore with a fellow missionary, a senior missionary, she mentioned casually something which led to an astonished question from me. So they're on the mission field talking as fellow missionaries. And then she said, and the words chill my very heart. You don't mean to say that you think all missionaries love one another. Amy says, of course, I had thought they did. I had never even dreamed they didn't. Of course, you know, not all missionaries love each other. I still remember being surprised at that when I was a little boy. My parents, we were in the car somewhere, and I don't remember how the conversation came up, but I said something about, you know, these two ladies, and my mom and dad said, well, actually, these are two, you know, ladies in my home church, actually, they're kind of angry with each other. They don't get along too well. And it was an absolute shock to me. It never even occurred to me that two people in my church, two adults, I mean, kids will squabble, but two adults in my church didn't get along. It never even crossed my mind that that was possible. Really? Two adults in my church don't get along? Even to this day, I have a hard time believing it. No, they did too. Go on, Mom and Dad. That's not true. Oh, but later on, I found out things did escalate. They really did not get along. F.B. Meyer, this is so true, so awful. Your attitude toward God is determined by your attitude toward your brother. You love God just as much as and no more than you truly love the brother whom you love least. So you figure out who is the Christian who really bugs you. Oh, that guy. That's how much you love God. That's it. So you have to love one another. Not just pastor to congregation, not just discipler to disciplee, not just, you know, the family love, you know, he's my uncle, so I love him. Everybody, every direction loves everybody. Say, but that guy is so odd. He is such a misfit. You got to love that guy too. Say, well, I don't. He's off-putting and insufferable. Then you're commenting on how much you love the Lord. Because the people who love the Lord will love that guy too. And the people who don't love the Lord much will say, no, Jesus, I'm not loving him. Thank you very much. Love one another, except these four people over here who are annoying. I'm not going to love them. So I love Jesus this much, but I'm not going to obey him that much. Mm-hmm. And that's where you're tested. And the last one, greet one another in small print with a holy kiss. Romans 16:16, greet one another with a holy kiss. 1 Corinthians 16:20, greet one another with a holy kiss. 2 Corinthians 13:12, greet one another with a holy kiss. 1 Peter 5:14, a little variety, greet one another with a kiss of charity, kiss of love. So, you know, there are lots of problems with this in church history. Eventually, it was discovered that all the pretty young women were getting more kisses of charity than the older women. And so eventually the church just kind of gave up on it. And so, you know, have we all. But the sentiment should be there. Eli the other day came up and kissed my hand. You know, the sentiment should be there. Maybe it is culturally inappropriate for us to be doing the holy kiss. But the sentiment, you know, I'm not trying to get away from you. I feel this way toward you. It should be there. And, you know, I kiss Vernon Perez every time I go see her. I think Teresa's okay with that. It's okay, you know? Like, in that case, nobody's going to fault me for it. But it should be, that's the way you feel about everybody. Even the person that doesn't smell good, or the person who's annoying, or the person that you find most off-putting. You should wish it. Not just pastor to congregation, not discipler to disciplee, but you to me, me to you, both of us to the third person to both of us, you add a fourth person, and on we go. Not just at Avalon, but also that Presbyterian guy who baptizes babies, and also the guy who has a different view of Calvinism, and the guy who has a different view of charismatic doctrine, and the guy who has a different view of whatever we're talking about, women's clothing, church music, I don't know, whatever we're talking about. You have to love these people, and you have to treat them, greet them with love. And at one time, that included a kiss of love. Perhaps not now. When any Christian thinks of you, or speaks of you, or treats you as if you are ignorant of correct perspectives where the Bible is silent or its data is complicated, where that happens, that's a big problem, because that's not one another. When you disagree with me, there's no kind way to say this. When you disagree with me, you're either telling me that I'm not smart or I'm not moral. I'm not honest. When you say, Presbyterian sir, I disagree with you over baby baptism, when you say it, you're saying you're not smart, or you know the truth and you're not willing to do it. That's this one. Morally compromised. There's no other way to disagree with somebody. You're either not smart enough to know what I know, or you're not honest enough. You're not submitted to Christ enough. So that's why it's important to say, you might be right. I disagree with you, but you might be right. That way, I'm not saying that you're not smart enough. I disagree with you, but you might be right. That's what Norman Grubb taught us, right? As far as morals, I don't really know what your motivations are. Now, where we're talking about chapter and verse scripture, you know, that's a different matter. Thou shalt not commit adultery. And you just told me that you committed adultery. So, okay, clearly you are morally compromised. You just told me that you were. But aside from those kinds of chapter and verse things in Scripture, I cannot say you are baptizing babies because you're morally compromised. I don't know why you're baptizing babies. You might be right. I don't know. I am not in a position to know everything where the Bible is silent or its data is complicated. I don't know. So I have to say, I disagree with you, but you might be right. That way I'm not saying I'm smarter than you are, and when you grow up, you'll know as much as I do. Anytime I don't have that approach to a Christian brother, where the Bible is silent or its data is complicated, anytime I don't have that approach to a Christian brother, I am torpedoing the body of Christ. I do that at Avalon if I don't have that attitude. I do that at Avalon compared to the Southern Baptist Convention or the Presbyterian denomination or whatever we're talking about. Every time I say, I'm right and you're wrong, I'm saying you're ignorant. Unless I also add, but perhaps you're right. And that way, I'm saying, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you're right. Every time I say you are morally compromised and I don't have eyewitness evidence, and there is no eyewitness evidence, for example, in a matter like pride, how do I know if you're proud? Somebody said, the pastor at that church over there, he's so proud. How do you know that? How would we ever know? And for that matter, who among us is not too proud? So I'm sure it is absolutely correct when you say it. Of course, we're all too proud and absolutely incorrect. Because how would you know that that guy is proud? Is there a sign on his forehead, I'm proud? You don't know that. So every time we say, I disagree with you because you're proud, then you are violating all of these one another statements. It said, you can't slander a person like that. If it's not kind and it's not true, don't say it. Don't think evil one of another, brethren. Do not murmur or grumble about one another, brethren. You know, you don't know these things. So every time we say, I disagree with you, and our thought is, I'm right and you're wrong, and I don't have chapter and verse to say so, but I'm right and you're wrong, we're saying I'm smarter than you are, or we're equally smart and you're dishonest with the facts, and I'm not. You're morally compromised. You are a rebel. There is no other way to do that. That's the only way that you can dogmatically disagree with somebody. When you do that, you saw all of these one another passages. How many times must we be told that we can't do that? Love just doesn't think evil. We're just not going to do that if we follow Jesus. So every time we do this, this is what's happening. That person who's making those conclusions, that person's thought, speech, and or conduct is undermining the Christian family. And you say, well, so what? So this. Every one another passage in the New Testament demands that we simply refuse to think evil, unkind, or untrue thoughts about any Christian in the whole world. Not just the Avalon family, but the Avalon family and those other churches around us. The ones who weren't even brave enough to meet today. Morally compromised. Every time you do that, you are violating all of these one another concepts. The Christian community cannot survive it. You can't do that. And this is especially hard for those nearest to us. So it's a quirk of church life that very few of us complain about the churches in China or the churches in Wyoming. We tend to complain about the churches that are in our area. Like, oh, a bunch of compromisers. And not just the churches in our area, but the Christians at Avalon. Oh, that guy, that guy. And then near it, the Christians at Avalon that we see all the time that bug us. And so we complain about the ones who are nearest us. As we get farther and farther away, we complain about the people less. But all of that is toxic for the Christian faith. And you realize we have been talking for the last few months about the decline of Avalon. You realize that all morning long we've been talking about that. That is the issue. So if Avalon ceases to be as we know it, it will be because people inside, once inside Avalon, have talked bad about us. People who are currently inside Avalon still talk bad about us. And people who have never been to Avalon talk bad about us. It's really not a bad little church, you know? But we were told that this would happen, the one another text that's not so sweet. If you bite and devour one another, watch out lest you be consumed by one another. And if Avalon ceases to exist as we know it today, that is going to be the reason. That's spiritual warfare. And that is why living in community can never be optional.